afternoon, Columbia and Greene counties. A happy Monday to you. It's the second Monday of the month, 2 p.m., and therefore you are listening to The Ag Show. And you're also listening to a song by Mr. Pat Linnan, who's teamed up by Mr. Lewis Monroe and others. The wonderful little local folks, the local band called, well, this is Nature Films. Really mellow, isn't it? We're going to be going through the usual today, going over some headlines, some anniversaries, some birthdays, some fun facts, some esoteric biodynamic agriculture readings of sorts, and many other things that I will surprise you with, including the Monsanto moment. Yes, I have prepared for you the latest from one of the most evil corporations voted year after year, Monsanto and Dow Chemical, sponsor of your Olympics. We'll get back to you on that. Hope you're all doing well. Shout out to all the local farmers out there and beyond. This tune is called Cabbage Town Lullaby. So today is a flower day, according to the biodynamic planting and gardening calendar, which means it's a good day to be handling your flowers. Pick some flowers, weed some flowers, sow some flowers, eat some flowers. It's a good day for it. Today's a flower day. There's also meteor showers happening up there, yonder skies. I think they have a name even. It begins with a P. I forget what it is, periclid something. So if you get outside, last night was pretty clear. Check out the meteor showers. The 17th is a new moon. And this month, as we've previously reported on the Ag Show and on our farm report Wednesday mornings, I will be on this Wednesday morning at 7:30 a.m. before Amy Goodman. More fun facts, more information, more farming stuff for you good folks out there. This month, of course, is two full moons, which many of you may know is called the blue moon. So on the 31st of August, we have the full moon, the second full moon of the month, and that would be your blue moon. The once in a blue moon, which really isn't all that long. I believe it's like 2.5 years. It's also a sturgeon moon, as the August moon is considered from the Native American traditions, particularly near the Lake Champlain and the Great Lakes regions. And their message for the sturgeon moon is fish on. The sturgeon are best caught during this month. However, there's been some problems with the sturgeon lately and population declining and so on, unfortunately. Let's see. What else do we have for you? Just a few fun facts that I suppose we'll throw in the mix. Today's Women's Day in Tunisia. Happy Women's Day, Tunisians and all others. 1961, on this day, the Berlin Wall was erected. It's the birthday of Fidel Castro. Castro must turn like 90-something. I can't believe that guy's still alive. Unbelievable. He was born in 1926, so I guess we could actually just do the math. Puts him at 85, 86, 87, 86. So not 90 yet. He was president of Cuba since 1952, and basically until recently. So that's basically half a century of being the president of Cuba. Happy birthday, Fidel. It's also the birthday of Alfred Hitchcock, born in 1899. And Hitchcock, he was an interesting character. Interesting character. He said, what did he say about TV? Let's see if I can remember this off the cuff. Alfred Hitchcock said that television benefits psychiatry from spreading information about it, but also by creating more of a need for it. Alfred Hitchcock, happy birthday. Independence Day in the Central African Republic. Happy Independence Day to the CAR. It's also the birthday of in 1818 of Lucy Stone. She was big in the women's suffrage movement, even that early in the 1800s, and also in the abolition of slavery. Shout out to Lucy Stone. Happy birthday. On this day in 1959, the first black students were admitted to Little Rock, Arkansas High School. To Little Rock High School in Arkansas. That was a big day. I believe the National Guard may have even been present for that one. And it's also the death day of Florence Nightingale. It was also a pretty amazing woman who helped with the healing of the world and is known for her work in nursing in particular, to raising the status of that noble profession. Shout out to all the nurses out there. Okay, so here we are. I'd like to make a couple of announcements and shout outs to the good folks out there. Last month we had Anna Duan in the house. She is from the Farmscape Ecology Program, and she has been working on this new farmer narrative project, which I definitely want to announce again, is still at the Philmont Library till the end of the day. I don't know what time they close. It might be gone. But then it goes to the Kinderhook Library. So for all of you up north, check it out. Starting tomorrow until August 25th will be this wonderful, wonderful exhibit called Journeys into Farming. And that's at the Kinderhook Library till the 25th of August. And then after that, if you still haven't caught it, catch the exhibit at the North Chatham Library September 4th through September 17th. That's the Journeys into Farming. Wonderful, wonderful work being done, exploring many new farms in our area. A diverse assortment there of different farmers. Blue Star Farm, Common Hands, Cool Whisper, Cowberry Crossing, Full Field, Hand Hollow, Lineage, New Leaf, Oakwood, Pegaso, Soulflower, Sparrowbush, Tusi Winery, and Whole Hog Farm. I mean, these are just a few of the names of new farmers in our area, new farms in our area. And the numbers are just increasing. It's really a wonderful thing. So shout out to all our farmers, especially the new ones. It's incredible. It's great to see that happening. Also shout out to the old farmers out there, if any of you are listening. Much respect. And, of course, to urge everyone to get to their farmers markets, Chatham Farmers Market. Get over there. They're on Fridays, I believe, at 2. Clermont, Saturdays. Copake, that would be the 2nd and 4th Saturdays. Hillsdale is the 1st and 3rd Saturday. And Hudson, Saturdays, 9 a.m. Kinderhook Farmers Market, Saturdays. Lebanon Valley on Sundays, and of course Philmont, our very dear Sunday farmers market in Philmont. And there's also something going down at the Red Barn up on 9H at 4 p.m. every Friday. There's some sort of vegetable distribution happening, as well as on 347 Warren Street. I believe Sundays is the day. Is that Sunday or Saturday? I gotta check up on that one. Don't forget about Coxsackie if you're that way. Coxsackie has a farmer's market. Catskill, wonderful farmer's market over there in Catskill. Also want to give a big shout out to Sparrowbush Farm. Ashley Lear, I just had a brochure. I've been made aware of a new winter farm share from Sparrowbush Farm. This is really exciting. There's not a lot of winter farm share. Well, I guess there are some winter farm shares here, there, and everywhere. But this is pretty exquisite. Check it out. Maybe give a call over there. 537-4401. That's 518. 537-4401 to check out what's going on with the winter share. It goes from November to May. And the email, sparrowbushfarm@gmail.com. This is located down in Germantown. And they will be doing drop-offs in Hudson. So if you're anywhere near the Hudson area and you're into getting vegetables, root crops predominantly, of course, all winter long, in addition to bread, pasture-raised meat, eggs, milk, get this, dry beans, 2 pounds every other pickup, and cheese from Amazing Real Life Food Company in Pine Plains. Good stuff, folks. Good stuff. I might even look into doing a winter share this year because we got to be keeping to eat local. Keep eating local, folks. Definitely the thing to do. So, what else? Shout out to Roxbury Farm, John Paul and Jody up there. Lucky to hear that the fire at TCI, the chemical fire that potentially left toxic residue, turns out there are no PCBs, or the level of PCBs are considered safe, back to normal. That's what we've been told. However, there are testing still to be done as far as other things are concerned, so we're waiting to hear back from them. And we actually have some audio, not right now during this show, but the good folks at WGXC have made it to one of the meetings of the Board of Supervisors and got some audio from the meeting that followed up on that. I think predominantly that was dealing with the early warning system or lack thereof. And there's another meeting coming up, I believe, with Aditi Barrett. And we're hoping to get some audio from that for you folks. So just to let you all know, the audio from the Board of Supervisors meeting will be aired this afternoon on the afternoon show from 4 to 6 p.m. That's your community radio station at work for you folks. WGXC rocking out and giving you important information. So please tune in this afternoon. We try to keep you updated with the latest agricultural news, what's going on. We have guests, and we'll continue to have guests, hopefully more frequently. And actually, shout out to Shoving Leopard Farm. Marina is the farmer down there. Her husband, Lewis Monroe, is part of the band I was just playing. And I think I even have another song from Lewis Monroe. I got to play this song from Lewis Monroe. And Marina from Shoving Leopard Farm may come in on the air at one point. I am hoping, definitely hoping. And it's not just because the name of her farm is super cool. So I'm going to play y'all a Lewis Monroe tune. I got to. This is just classic. This is called Let's Eat Food. Lewis Monroe, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to The Ag Show. It's your host, Kieran. WGXC. Happy Monday.
When I come home from work, you were there without your shirt in the kitchen, making iced tea. I have some tea, I have a beer. So nice to be sitting here. Let's eat food. taken up a whole row. Read a book, but there's nowhere I wanna go. Oh, later we could make some sushi. I'll make too much and eat until my stomach hurts. Then we can watch a movie.
Mr. Lewis Monroe, Let's Eat Food. Awesome tune. So, we're back on the Ag Show here. It's your host, Kieran, and I'm going to move on and talk food a little bit because agriculture has a lot to do with food, obviously. So, I'm learning a little bit about omega-3s and raw food and omega-6s. So, omega-3 fatty acids are really good for you. And omega-6s are too, but you need to watch out how many you have because it's easy in this culture of agriculture to have too many because that's the corn and other grains, and we get that from now meat too as well. So omega-3s are the fatty acids we want. And let's see. Omega-3 molecules are highly perishable. This is an article, actually, by the way, in the most recent publication of LILIPO, which stands for Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Happiness, great little quarterly publication, a lot of health stuff in there, a lot of interesting articles. This is a woman named Victoria Butenko, who actually, this is from her book, Raw and Beyond, How Omega-3 Nutrition is Transforming the Raw Food Paradigm. So this has to do with raw food diets and cautions people to just be really careful to get your nuts, but not too many of them. Here's what I'll tell you. The best sources of omega-3s, according to Victoria Butenko, here are the best sources of omega-3s. Flax seeds and flaxseed oil. Walnuts, very good. Fatty fish. Leafy greens, particularly spinach, romaine, and arugula. And chia seeds. Who would have thought? Chia seeds. Good for you. For their omega-3s. So she says, because the unique flexibility of the omega-3 molecule makes it highly perishable, in recent years, genetic engineers have been manipulating the DNA of seeds, trying to develop strains with higher omega-6 and lower omega-3 content in order to prolong the storage life of seeds and oils made from them. Because, of course, keeping this on your supermarket shelf apparently is way more important than keeping it super healthy for these folks. Bottom line. In addition, most farm animals such as cattle, sheep, pigs, and chickens have increasingly been fed soy and corn. Most likely genetically engineered soy and corn on top of that, and other grains instead of grass and hay, which has altered the balance of omegas present in the meat. So people who consume animal products would benefit from knowing that the meat from animals that consume grass is high in omega-3s, while the meat from animals that consume corn and other grains is high in omega-6s. And the fact is that even fish aren't guaranteed to be a good source of omega-3s anymore. Omega-3 fatty acids are the main reason doctors recommend eating fish regularly, but farmed fish are now being fed a heavy grain diet, vastly reducing their levels of fish oils. As, for example, a very popular fish in recent years, tilapia, contains twice the level of omega-6 as omega-3. And last year, the New York Times reported that, quote, compared with other fish, farmed tilapia contains relatively small amounts of beneficial omega-3 fatty acids because the fish are fed corn and soy instead of lake plants and algae, the diet of wild tilapia. So they're doing to the fish what they've been doing to the beef. Not too good. So I just wanted to share that with you. And let's see about the raw foodie part of it. How nuts have long been considered a convenient source of raw nutrition. They're compact and full of calories. So hemp, flax, walnuts, or chia, but the shelf life will be short due to omega-3s quickly becoming rancid. So you want to eat them right away. Raw foodists who want a healthy, sustainable raw food diet need to focus mostly on whole foods, salads, smoothies, and juices, with occasional tiny portions of nuts and seeds. It can be tough to maintain a 100% raw food diet with such restrictions. Many long-term raw foodists have already intuitively adopted this more limited version of a 100% raw diet, and others have shifted to a high raw diet, adding back some cooked foods. So, looks like some sensible disclosure of information there on the part of Victoria Butenko. Oh, we got another caller there, but I'm not going to be able to handle that because I need to move on to the food of the gods, which is the next article in this Lillipo magazine. Hiram Crespo. Hiram Crespo is the author of this one. Great little article. And he's talking about cacao. Coca, that's right. The ancient Aztec cacao bean. It was used as currency, and it even had a deity, Ectua. And he presided over cacao and trade, which the same beans are made out of chocolate today. So we're going to talk about cacao for a minute. And for the Maya, they believe the gods discovered the cacao plant in a sacred mountain where other food items were found, and later the feathered serpent gave it to humankind to cultivate. And there are numerous ancient tablets with medicinal, ceremonial, and culinary references to it. It was also made into a powder that was smoked. Freudian slip there. A power powder. A powder that was smoked. So cacao consumption has always been for the refined folks. What's interesting that I found about this article is how much stuff is in the cacao. It secretes the same chemicals and feel-good hormones that are produced when we make love or when an athlete experiences the runner's high. Prominent among them is serotonin, the chemical of well-being. And it also contains anandamide, which translates literally as the chemical of bliss, and so many minerals, many which are lacking in the standard American diet. It's nature's own mineral supplement. When eaten raw, it has antidepressant properties, increases pleasure, alleviates stress. It's a mood booster, and even given by the authorities in London to the youth leaving the club scene late at night, where it's proven to reduce the rates of violent crimes and unruly behavior. So all you aggressive, unruly people out there, eat more cacao. It has to be the good stuff, though. Among other health benefits, it keeps the heart healthy, it's brain food, supports memory, learning, relaxes the muscles, and alleviates menstrual pain. And this is why women naturally crave chocolate when pregnant or during menstruation. The human body has the wisdom to recognize that superfoods like cacao and maca help to regulate the hormonal system. So once again, cacao, folks. But it's very important that this be taken in the unprocessed form, unadulterated cacao. Because most commercial chocolate has lost much of its nutritional value. In its raw form, cacao has more than 20 times the antioxidants and that processed chocolate has, and has little to no caffeine. It can be used in powder form in smoothies or drinks. And all-natural homemade dairy-free chocolate ice cream can be made and served in 2 minutes by blending cacao powder, a sweetener, and a couple of frozen bananas. So there you have it, the food of the gods, cacao. Who knew it was, well, maybe some of you already did know that. But I didn't know it was that good for you. Shout out to all the cacao producers out there. So let's see, what else do we got? We have in The Observer, it's a lovely little publication and it's free. You'll find it in your local cafe, most likely. It's called the Hill Country Observer and they have some great articles. Tracy Frisch writes for them, and she's got some great agricultural articles, I've noticed. And she writes one on a professor, a Bard professor, actually, who is growing grass-fed meats, animals. She's having grass. Let's see. She has sheep. Her predominantly, she has grass-fed sheep and lambs and a whole herd of red Devon cows. It's just pick up that. Check that out. Her name is Jennifer Phillips. She came to Stuyvesant 10 years ago, then moved down to Clermont, where she owns Gansvoort Farm, which means goose crossing in Dutch. She held a big field day with Cornell Cooperative Extension. It was a great resource for farmers, by the way. They have all sorts of resources for folks who are just getting started or who have been going and need resources of some sort, information about credit assistance, financial assistance, all sorts of good stuff at Cornell Cooperative Extension. Particularly the research part of that, what they do is pretty honorable. And now she has, let's see, nearly 170 mainly Icelandic ewes and their lambs, plus a dozen red Devon cattle. I know the red Devons. They're actually a short, stocky Irish bunch, those red Devons, I think. I think they're Devon, or are those the Dexters, or maybe both. Anyhow, they come from across the pond there originally, Red Devons, great little cows. And there, all these animals are grass-fed. She does orchard grass, perennial rye, meadow brome, timothy, white, red, and alsite clovers, bird's foot, trefoil, alfalfa, and chicory. So she has a just amazing story here. I'll let you maybe go on and read the article yourself. But it seems like she's been pretty successful there at Gansvoort Farm. They mentioned something about the lambing on pasture in the mid-spring. She follows other practices endorsed by the animal welfare approved. She doesn't dock the tails on the sheep or the cows, and she always provides fresh water in every paddock. Providing them with shade is key as well. Planting more shade trees around the farm is key. And keep an eye out on those predators. John Paul mentioned him and Jody lost a few sheep, actually, in the middle of the drought, which farmers are still reeling from the side effects of this drought. It's been killer. So coyotes can devastate a flock in no time, which, you know, farmers advocate killing the coyotes, of course, but Phillips actually disagrees. She says that she feels like you don't have to kill them. You just have to be more aware and have good fencing and so on and so forth. She started out with Finn Dorset sheep, which now she's moved on to the Icelandics. I guess she prefers those. And just want to give a shout out to Jennifer Phillips from Gansvoort Farm. A great article there in The Observer. The other article in the latest Observer is about compost in Vermont. And you know me, I love about learning about the compost. Shout out to Malibu Compost over there in California. Demeter certified biodynamic compost providing fertility and wonderful, wonderful, wonderfulness. Nutrients for the soils, for gardens all over the place. They're doing some pretty rocking stuff over there. Matter of fact, I just read that Malibu Compost was working with Punk Rock Gardens. Look this up if you want to see what's going on the West Coast right now with Punk Rock Gardens. It's punkrockgardens.com. There's a place called the Morecambe Rose Garden. It's one of the oldest rose gardens in the country in Oakland, California. It was planted in 1930, or in the 1930s, as part of the public works projects initiated during that decade. And it looks like the roses are stressed out. The roses are not doing well in the Morecambe Rose Garden, so they got Malibu compost together. They stirred up some biodynamic preparations, some compost teas. They spread this stuff all over, and the results were phenomenal almost immediately, within weeks. This stuff can be really helpful against plant diseases and mildew and mold and so on and so forth. So if you're interested in that article, look up Punk Rock Gardens. Pretty cool stuff. And the compost situation in Vermont goes like this. They are now going to mandate the composting of food scraps and yard waste. That's right. They're laying down the law. I'm not necessarily one for advocating more rules and more laws, as some of you may know. However, when it comes down to common sense things that are simply better for all of us and better for the planet, better for the earth, such as composting, sometimes a few rules might help move people along. But there's a major plan for expansion of composting, and this is by Craig Idlebrook in The Observer, and he's talking about Peter Shumlin signing a new waste reduction law in June that will require Vermonters to divert all organic material, including food waste, lawn clippings, and leaves from the state's landfills by 2020. I mean, this seems to be so sensible. If you're in a situation where you can compost your food scraps in your house, I know some of you live in the city here, right in Hudson, or in a town, or have a tiny backyard, or no backyard, and composting food scraps can be very, very difficult. But it's amazing what it does to your household trash. It makes it so much more bearable. It makes it lighter, it makes it less volume, and it's not as stinky. And furthermore, you are helping out the fertility on somebody's garden somewhere. So there's folks from the Highfield Center for Composting, wonderful little nonprofit group in Hardwick, Vermont. Those guys are doing great work on the composting front. And there's this guy from the U.S. Composting Council. And he said that the legislature, by signaling that composting will have to increase in Vermont, will encourage private investment in composting infrastructure. This is real. This is happening, folks. It's all about composting. Check it out. If I had extra money, says Michael Verga of the U.S. Composting Council, the executive director, if I had extra money to invest in a composting facility, Vermont would be a great place to go. So they're way ahead of the curve there, Vermont. although San Francisco and Portland, Oregon has been pretty gung-ho about their composting. You know, I was talking with someone here in Hudson a while ago, and we were talking about trying to get a Hudson citywide composting operation where we'd collect buckets, give buckets, people could put all their food scraps, all the restaurants could separate the food scraps out, they'd save money on dumpster fees, stink, nastiness, flies, etc., etc. And this summer, it was a great idea, but it never necessarily gained ground. It would be tough. It's a tough transition, especially for a lot of folks, but to me, it just simply makes a lot of sense. Compost everything that you can. And this summer, the State Department of Environmental Protection is holding stakeholder meetings and drafting new regulations to phase in a ban on commercial and institutional organic waste in landfills. So, we'll keep an eye out on that. Of course, one of the main concerns is contamination, particularly herbicide contamination. If you do lawn clippings, for example, you get the lawn clippings from a golf course, for example, where there's pesticides and herbicides all over the stuff. You have to have a way to regulate and weed that out. No pun intended, but you got to weed out the bad compost. So, shout out to Vermont, those guys. Moving on here, The Ecologist is reporting that there's a major decline of native butterflies. 72% of butterfly and moth species have declined in the past 10 years. These are major, major pollinators. So important to our ecosystem. So important to all the flowers, all the vegetables. They have an effect on the population of viable seeds that result, obviously, because if they can't pollinate the plant, then the plant can't produce a viable seed, which means there won't be the plant next year, where there otherwise possibly would have been one. And we like our plants, don't we? So butterflies, let's just keep them in your mind. Shout out to the butterflies. They like sunny yet sheltered areas, such as tall grasses. And if you have the acreage, you may be well to put aside a little with the butterflies in mind. Hedgerows are always good. Sort of glade areas with large shady trees, but nevertheless grass for them to hang out in. And they love holly, ivy, and buckthorn. The plants, that is. So, butterflies. We need them. In California, New York are leading the country in local produce. Can you believe it? We're up there with Cali, folks. New York on the map for local produce demands. A rise in farmers markets, urban farmers markets in particular, have been just taking off across the state. New York City, for example, has just experienced a boom in farmers markets and other forms of CSAs and direct sale. So basically, the number of direct sales markets, with New York and California leading the way, is now 7,864. And those are just the ones that are registered with the USDA. In contrast, in 1994, gosh, that's like almost 20 years ago, there were 1,744. Now there's 7,000. So we're on a major, major upward positive trend here. Local food direct sales markets. Keep it up, folks. Grist is reporting the Center for Urban Education and Sustainable Agriculture has a wonderful article about farming without water, otherwise known as dry farming. This is key, particularly now that 1,584 counties nationwide have been considered natural disaster area, including ours, due to the drought, which is just about half of all the counties in the United States are considered natural disaster areas. Particularly the Midwest and the Great Plains are suffering dramatically. And there's been a lot of discussion lately in the mainstream media. I was listening to this whole question about the Oglala Aquifer, for example, and all our underground water and how we're going to conserve it. This was, I heard on Marketplace or something like that, that they said part of the problem is that it's free, that there's no price on this water, and that all we need to do is regulate it, put a price on it, privatize it, own it, and therefore we can dole it out to people who can afford it, and therefore save our aquifer, which is declining rapidly. I mean, that's our groundwater. We need it. It takes a long time to refill, like thousands of years, long time. So some of the discourse is centered around privatization of water, and some of us know better and can look back at a time when we didn't have industrial agriculture, for example, and looking at the processes of monoculture, high petroleum input agriculture, degradation of soil, and type of agriculture that requires heavy input of water, which then causes, of course, erosion and loss of topsoil. So maybe we should start talking about how to have agricultural systems that have water retention as one of the main keys. For example, in biodynamic agriculture, that working with the water element on your farm and the flow of water. You know, Hugh Williams over there at Threshold Farm has this great thing with contours he does. He, you know, comes from Australia where water is a huge issue. And there are ways of working with water on your farm that actually preserve it and possibly even create more water. It's just, you know, healthy farm practices as opposed to industrial monoculture, which is what we need to be talking about, which some of us have been talking about for years now. So just want to keep all those suffering from the drought, keep those in mind as well. Let's see. Moving on. I think it just might be time for the Monsanto moment. And for that, we need some theme music. We need theme music because Monsanto moment. We're going to give you some information on the latest antics of the world's worst corporation. That is Monsanto. What have they been up to lately? Well, I'll tell you. They're bringing back Agent Orange. You got it. 2,4-D herbicide. Whoops, sorry, that was a little loud. Yeah, so, got some information on Monsanto for you folks. They are teaming up with Dow Chemical, that's right, yours truly, the sponsor of the Olympics, and producer of some of the most god-awful accidents and chemicals in world history, to bring back Agent Orange. And why are they doing that? Because this year, in the middle of this drought, they're experiencing a huge proliferation of superweeds. The superweeds that were predicted to come and take place over 10 years ago when they first introduced this Roundup, when they first introduced GM crops that could be Roundup resistant. Predictions were abound that it would develop superweeds and then super insects as well to the pesticides if you keep pouring this stuff on there. And the predictions, lo and behold, have come true. And they are now finding huge numbers of corn rootworms, yummy corn rootworms, in sprayed fields that are resistant to the pesticide. So that's a problem. That's a big problem because these rootworms are thriving in the heat. So the damage that they do is actually magnified significantly by the drought, because the corn stalks are already suffering, they can't grow, and these little rootworms come and just finish the job off with no problem whatsoever, which is why we're seeing a major corn shortage. We are going to have major corn shortages in the Midwest, and we'll keep you posted on the after effects of that one, the fallout. So Monsanto, of course, is denying that their corn is falling over all over the place. They're denying that there's any such thing as superweeds or superbugs, although the obvious science proves to the contrary. And even though they're supposedly competitors with Dow Chemical, their solution to the superweeds is to make more powerful chemicals, which Agent Orange was actually banned. This is banned, a long time ago, and they want to bring it back to add it to the fields in huge amounts. They're taking a World War I approach, the idea of the surge. If it's not working, send more. Use a bigger hammer if it's not working. So that's a major problem. Major problem. Bad Monsanto. Let's see, what else? Maybe I should give a little bit of a history of Monsanto. I've never really quite done that on this show. And we might be well to get some more theme music here. Yeah. Monsanto. They're actually created in 1901. These guys have been around since 1901 when they first came on the market with the artificial sweetener saccharin. Then they actually went on to work on the Manhattan Project to research uranium, which led to the atomic bomb. Yes, that's Monsanto. They even operated a nuclear facility for the U.S. government until the late 1980s. During the 1940s, they became the leading manufacturer of synthetic fibers and plastics, including polystyrene, which is ranked fifth in the EPA's list of chemicals whose production generates the most total hazardous waste. Nice job, guys. So their herbicides include 2,4-5-T, DDT, Lasso, Agent Orange. Of course, Agent Orange used as a defoliant by the U.S. government during the Vietnam War and still to this day being used down in areas such as Colombia for the cocoa farmers down there and other innocent people that just happen to live there in that jungle where they just spray it. Spray, spray. Agent Orange produced by Monsanto dioxin levels many times higher than produced by Dow. So Monsanto actually outdoes Dow here on that front. And Monsanto was the key defendant in the lawsuit brought by Vietnam War veterans in the United States. Internal Monsanto memos show that Monsanto knew of the problems of dioxin contamination of Agent Orange when it sold it to the U.S. government for use in Vietnam. They're also being taken to court for war crimes. Groups have been trying to take them to court for years now because of the fact of 3 million civilians and servicemen, an estimated 500,000 Vietnamese children have been born with deformities attributed to Agent Orange, leading them to be calls for them to be prosecuted for war crimes. No compensation has ever been paid. I just find it pretty interesting that Dow Chemical is sponsoring our Olympics and that Hillary Clinton is in Vietnam supposedly apologizing or looking at cleanup possibilities. This is a dark, dark bit of our past here, and I felt compelled to share it because war and agriculture actually have a very unique connection, particularly when it comes to the United States. So anyhow, Monsanto has turned to its agriculture division, and by the time Agent Orange was banned in the U.S., Lasso was facing criticism. Monsanto had developed Roundup, the active ingredient glyphosate, which is shown to have major, major negative effects in lab animals, liver, kidney failure, and rats. It's created spontaneous abortion, infertility, and deformities in cattle. It was launched in 1976. And Monsanto is also a major producer of both dioxins and PCBs. What do you know? Polychlorinated biphenyls. That's what their business, even though those are now banned now. You're not allowed to use them. So lawsuits, cleanup costs, cutting into their profit line, supposedly. In 1997, the Seattle Times reported that Monsanto sold 6,000 tons of contaminated waste to the Idaho fertilizer companies, which contain the carcinogenic heavy metal cadmium. PCBs were produced starting in 1929. It was considered the wonder chemical back then. The US EPA says that now, for over 50 years, later, PCB has been demonstrated to cause cancer, as well as a variety of other adverse health effects on the immune system, reproductive system, nervous system, and endocrine system. So Monsanto knew about this stuff early on. And in 2000, the current Monsanto had emerged from various transactions, including a merger for a time with Pharmacia. And has moved now into biotechnology, as we've reported. They're creating a new narrative for the company, supposedly getting into food exclusively. They want to feed you and feed the hungry world with their amazing technology. Their executive, Rob Fraley, who heads the plant molecular biology research team, also has said to hype the potential of GM crops within the company as a once-in-a-generation opportunity for Monsanto to dominate a whole new industry. Invoking the monopoly success of Microsoft as a powerful analogy. So they began to portray this genetic engineering in a groundbreaking technology that could feed the hungry world and supposedly be drought resistant. That was how they sold all these seeds to India, the poor folks over in India, which actually didn't work. And as we have seen this summer, their so-called drought resistant corn has not really worked. They came on the market, not a GM crop, but first of all, with a GM cattle drug. That was their first biotech product, which is the growth hormone RBGH or RBST, which is now just banned left and right and center. I don't even know what the details are of the banning of RBGH, but they found out that it's just simply not good for you, not good for the cows, not good for anybody except Monsanto's profit line. Monsanto's corporate strategy led them for the first time to acquire now seed companies, and they're coming down on the seed companies, buying them up left and right. They invest. They've spent so far $10 billion, $1 billion globally buying up seed companies, a push that continues to this day. They want to corner that market and control all the seeds. They've bought up Holden's Foundation Seeds, Seminis, the largest seed company not producing corner soybeans, and the Dutch seed company De Ruyter Seeds, and the big cotton seed firm Delta and Pine. It's now the world's largest seed company, accounting for almost a quarter of the global proprietary seed market. Just a couple more fun facts here with Monsanto. You are listening to the Monsanto Moment on the Ag Show. Oh, our background music ran out. We got to have more background music because there's some juicy stuff. It's the fifth largest agrochemical company. And Roundup is just everywhere, including Columbia County. And it's driving up costs for the farmer. I know farmers personally who've stopped using this stuff because it's actually more expensive for them. It's driving up the cost. There's a 134% price hike in less than 2 years. And they're raising prices unencumbered. So that's kind of what they're up to lately. Oh, and one last thing I want to mention during this Monsanto moment is that they are now devoting an annual budget of $10 million to harassing, intimidating, suing, and in some cases bankrupting American farmers and Canadian farmers over alleged improper use of its patented seeds. I'll end this Monsanto moment with a quote. That's Rammstein. I wasn't going to end with a quote from Rammstein, but I'll end from a quote from the President of the General Assembly of the United Nations, who condemns corporate profiteering. And he says, quote, "The essential purpose of food, which is to nourish people, has been subordinated to the economic aims of a handful of multinational corporations that monopolize all aspects of food production, from seeds to major distribution chains, and they have been the prime beneficiaries of the world crisis. A look at the figures for 2007, when the world food crisis began, shows that corporations such as Monsanto and Cargill, which control the cereals markets, saw their profits increase by 45 and 60% respectively." There you have it, folks. Look out for those guys. All right. You get the picture, huh? That's your Monsanto moment, brought to you by the Ag Show here on WGXC, and we are just about out of time. That's right. I'm sorry to inform you, but we got to get out of here. We're going to wrap things up. I'm going to play a quick tune. It's really nice. Hopefully, wasn't too much crazy information for you all. Shanika's coming in the studio, so that means my time is up. Thanks for listening. I'm Kieran Riley. This is The Ag Show. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Hudson, Catskill. Take care.